This is Washington Watch Weekly, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. On this week's program, we'll talk with a high school valedictorian who's made waves during his graduation. A little later in the show, we'll talk with author and religious liberty expert David Limbaugh. But first, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by Congressman Steve Scalise to talk about recent developments in the NSA scandal. Here's Tony as he gets things started.
You know, it's a sad day in our nation when not only our government abuses its power, and, you know, we've seen all these scandals coming forth from this administration. Not only are they abusing their power, but they're snooping. They're collecting phone records, and some are you listening into conversations. You know what this does? This causes the people to distrust government. And joining us now with more on this scandal that is still unfolding is Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana's 1st Congressional District and the chairman of the Republican Study Committee and a former colleague of mine from the Louisiana House. Congressman Scalise, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's always great to be back with you.
Well, Steve, I know it's a closed-door session, so some you can't share with us, but a lot of people wondering what's behind these Orwellian tactics where the NSA and DOJ, they're snooping on Americans.
Well, Tony, I, and of course it was a classified briefing. I had just become familiar with this program in the NSA, the same way a lot of other people did through the news media. And frankly, you know, just commenting on what we've read about in the paper, I'm very concerned that the government could be running a program where they literally could be going and just getting full access to every phone call made by every American without even suspicion. And you know, typically you would think you'd go to a judge if you had a concern that a certain person was involved in terrorism, let's say. You know, they can go to the judge and they can say, we want to track this person's phone calls to see if they've called some other terrorist suspect. But in this case, it seems they were just literally, they have massive databases of every person's phone call, and then they can just go and tap it and do searches on it if they have a suspicion about somebody without even going to a judge. And that's very concerning to me. Obviously, we've got to get a lot more information to know what all the facts are, but just from what I've heard and read so far, I have some serious concerns about this program.
I mean, this sounds like something we would hear about in the People's Republic of China, not the United States of America.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I have the full confidence that if there is a terrorist suspect, that the federal government has means in place to go and find out if that person is in contact with other terrorists. And those programs are out there, and they have very strict rules, and you have to go before FISA judges and other judges. This program did not seem or does not seem to have those same kind of constraints, and again, just poses some very serious concerns.
Well, Congressman Scalise, there have been some hearings in the past on some of these programs. It appears from early reports that it's possible that the Obama administration officials who were involved in this program may have misled Congress to the extent of it. Is there concern that maybe the administration is not being forthright with the Congress about just how far they're going in their surveillance programs?
Well, you know, and unfortunately, this isn't the first time that we've had members of the Obama administration saying things that very likely could be misleading to Congress, and in fact, you know, in this instance, possibly even lying to Congress, which is a crime, and so you know that's going to be investigated, and I would encourage our oversight committees that have jurisdiction to be very aggressive in doing that. You know, if somebody comes and testifies before a committee, and they're asked a question that would breach national security or ask about classified information, clearly you don't disclose classified information in a non-classified setting. But that doesn't mean you have permission to lie. No comment
right.
would be an answer that would be acceptable. But to think that just because it's a question that might compromise some classified information, you don't have the authority to lie in your answer. And so that is the area that I'd like to see us investigate.
Yeah, I think the appropriate response would be, you know, there you have two different types of hearings. You have open hearings and closed hearings in which classified
right.
information can be shared. And you could just say, I cannot speak to that in this format, or that is something has to be talked about in a closed meeting. But it does appear that maybe the administration has not been forthright and has misled the administration. What are the next steps for Congress here on specifically when we talk about NSA and what was happening there with this snooping? What's next?
Well, and I don't serve on the Intelligence Committee or the other relevant committees, but I would hope that they're going to be doing oversight to find out exactly what was happening with this program, how it was being implemented, and if things were done inappropriately, then we ought to pursue that and turn it over to prosecutors. But it's early in finding out the facts, but we ought to find out the facts, just like in all these other scandals, whether it's IRS, Benghazi, the AP phone records. You know, you go back to a year and a half ago with the Solyndra scandal. It all started because we in the House have been very aggressive in our oversight of the Obama administration, and we've seen in many cases the president's fallen very far from his promises of being transparent, the most transparent administration ever. He said he would be, and he's been far from it. In fact, in many cases, he's withheld data. We've had to go and subpoena. So, we need to be aggressive in our oversight on all of these fronts, because it just raises serious questions about the kind of administration that President Obama is running in all these agencies.
Congressman Scalise, I know you're going to have to go here in just a moment. I want to ask you one final question. As we look at these scandals, you touched on them. You've got Benghazi, you've got the IRS, you've got DOJ. Now it looks like there's another scandal possibly brewing within the Department of State. Are you concerned about how this undermines the trust that the American people are willing to place in government?
Absolutely. You know, and when you look at especially the IRS scandal, that seems to be the one that resonates most with people because, you know, with Benghazi, I mean, you know, you had Americans who were killed overseas, including an ambassador. And I still think we haven't found out all the facts on that, and we're digging and trying to find out what we can. But when you look at the IRS scandal, the IRS touches every American. And I think most people's initial reaction when they hear the three letters IRS, it's kind of the recoil. And, you know, and that's just if they're operating fairly, following the law. But the fact that we now know, and it's been acknowledged, that they were targeting American citizens based on their political views, I think that frightens everybody, whether you're liberal or conservative or independent, whatever your political leanings are. The fact that in the United States of America, that you can have a government agency targeting American citizens based on their political views, it goes against everything we believe in, Tony. This is the sort of thing that might be happening in third world countries and in tyrannical dictatorships, but not in the United States of America. And I think that's why it's resonated so strongly, and again, why we need to be very aggressive. But when you recognize that this is the agency, the IRS, that is tasked with enforcing Obamacare, it raises even bigger questions about Obamacare, and can we trust the IRS to be in charge and have access to all of our medical information?
Absolutely, without question. It is something that we should be considering very seriously. And I hope that you and your colleagues are successful in possibly at least defunding Obamacare, if not completely overriding it. Congressman Scalise, thanks so much for being with us. As always, appreciate your insights.
Great being with you, Tony. Thanks so much.
If you'd like to let your member of Congress know how you feel about your right to privacy, you can contact them when you go to TonyPerkins.com. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. We'll be back with more Washington Watch Weekly right after this.
How long will it take to change America? Well, set aside 5 minutes on June 30th and find out. Hello, I'm Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council in Washington. There's no challenge in America too big for God. And based on the last few weeks of disappointments, that's a comforting thought. Whether it's the Boy Scouts losing their moral bearings or the Pentagon putting faith in the crosshairs, Christians everywhere should feel a new urgency to pray for America. On Sunday, June the 30th, that's exactly what FRC is asking churches to do as a part of Call to Fall. There's nothing fancy about it. All we're asking is for churches to set aside time to get on their faces before the Lord and repent. It's a simple but powerful commitment to join together for a second Chronicles 7:14 moment. If my people, God says, will humble themselves and pray, then I will hear from heaven. Check out Call to Fall. That's call, the number 2, fall.com. America's in need of spiritual healing, and that healing starts with us.
Welcome back to Washington Watch Weekly. Well, up next, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by a young man whose faith is bigger than the threats made by others. Here's Tony as he gives us a little background.
Well, our founding father's vision for this country was that of liberty and freedom for our people. rights that were given by God and have been secured in our Constitution. However, there have been many attacks on our religious freedoms recently, growing, really. A direct assault on the Constitution, I would say. Some may simply sit back and claim our government has become too powerful to fight, that we just can't fight City Hall, as some would say. Yet others boldly choose to stand up and uphold the intentions of our founding fathers, knowing that the rights we have been secured by the blood of patriots. Well, one young man, valedictorian of his high school class at Liberty High School in South Carolina, is Roy Costner IV. He courageously chose not to capitulate to the threats of the atheists, but rather to honor God and live out his constitutionally protected First Amendment right of the freedom of religion. And I welcome Roy to the program now. Roy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, and thank you for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us. Let me start. I've talked about this once or twice here on the program, but give our listeners a little bit of the background on your story of what happened during your valedictorian speech.
During my speech, I decided after many days of prayer and devotion that I was led by God to give a prayer during my speech. And instead of doing the pre-approved speech that the school board had said that could contain no religious aspects of it altogether, I ripped it up on stage and then proceeded with the speech that I had originally gave them, but with inclusion of the Lord's Prayer.
Now, to give our listeners a little history behind this, Roy, back in, I think it was February, the school board was contacted by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and they were told that they had too much prayer at their board meetings, and so they stopped doing these student-led prayers at these board meetings, and then they decided to adopt this policy where no prayer would be offered at the graduation service. So the kind of the backdrop here was the atheists were on the sidelines waiting to see if the school would allow prayer at the graduation. How much of that were you involved in? I mean, did the school administrators kind of warn you, saying, "Hey, don't pray. We don't want that. We want to check out your speech. We cannot offend the atheists." How far did they go?
Well, let me start with saying we had tremendous community support. It wasn't that they were contacted by people within the school district. It was that they were contacted by someone from a different state. And so I felt like the community was kind of behind me. And our principal, she sat down with me in our salutatorian about 2 weeks before when I found out that I was actually valedictorian, because I really had no idea that I was going to be. And she sat down and spoke with us and said that there could be absolutely no aspect or mention of Christ, Allah, whoever you may praise, or religious expression of views within our speech on stage. And it fired me up at first, because I was like, "Well, I didn't say this, but I didn't understand why." I mean, we've been contacted by this outside group, like I was saying, who is just trying to restrict our rights, I feel.
A good point to be made is that this was from outside the community. It was not with inside. And this is the pattern, Roy, the Freedom From Religion Foundation in particular, small organization in Wisconsin, that go across the country looking primarily for small jurisdictions that may not have the funds to defend themselves. But going back to our story here, Roy, how did you come about this decision? Did you talk with your parents, your pastor? Who did you consult with in this process?
Well, at first, I decided I felt like I was led to, but then I was taking a step back, and the pastor and I didn't tell both of my parents. I only told my father about it when he read through it the first time, and he contacted the other pastors, which and then contacted me, and they said they wanted to make sure that this wasn't for political reasons, and it was to honor God. And after, about, I think it was 3 or 4 days of prayer and devotion, I had decided, but God had decided that this is what he wanted me to do.
And Roy, what has been the response since I've seen the video? People obviously responding very positively there at the graduation, erupting in cheering, and we're seeing that across the country when people stand up and express themselves in their religious freedom. But what's been the response since then?
It's been overwhelming. I mean, there's been some negative response, but the positive always outweighs the negative. And I have no regrets for what I did. It was just this is what God wanted me to do. And I felt it was necessary to include that in honoring him, for he's been such an important part of my life. He's the one who got me there, and if it wasn't for him, it wouldn't have blown up like it did. It's all to him.
Well, I also know in reading your remarks that you thank the Lord for parents who guided you in your Christian faith.
Yes, sir.
And I think it's important that you were under the authority of your parents. You made a recognition of them, and you gave thanks for what God has done through your parents. And I think that's a message to many families out there, and parents in particular, that you can have a tremendous influence on your kids by modeling what Christian faith is all about.
Oh yes, sir, definitely.
Well, Roy, let me ask you one last question. I know you got to go, but I appreciate you joining us this afternoon on Washington Watch. But let me ask you this. What would you say to other young people who feel intimidated in an increasingly, hostile culture to expressing one's Christian faith? What would you say to those young people?
I would say if you never take a stand, there will never be a change. It's time for us as young adults to take our stand if we want to have a change in this world.
Well, Roy, we are certainly proud of you for taking that stand, and know that you've got some fans here in Washington, D.C. that are cheering you on as you go on to college and continue to take that stand for faith.
Well, thank you, and thank you for letting me spread the word.
All right. Roy Costner, the fourth valedictorian at Liberty High School in South Carolina, who courageously stood up in the face of the atheists. By the way, they weren't happy afterwards. They complained to the school and wanted to know if the school was going to punish him for saying the Lord's Prayer. Yeah. And the school said, what are we going to do? He's already graduated. Atheists, they never give up. But this is, I'm telling you, this is what encourages me as I see this. This is not an isolated incident. The attacks on religious freedom are not isolated, but the courage of young people like Roy, that's not isolated either. You've got young folks who have counted the cost, that know what it costs something to stand up for their faith, and they're bold and they're courageous. And that gives me great hope for this country, and we want to be a part of raising up more of those young people to stand up for their faith. And by the way, we have an internship program, and I should have mentioned this to Roy as he gets into college, but we've got an internship program here at FRC that we're equipping young people to be able to stand up and defend the faith just like Roy.
You can find out more about your religious liberties when you go to TonyPerkins.com. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. We'll be back right after this.
On October the 11th through the 13th, join fellow Americans who want to get our country back on the right course. Come to Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. and stand for faith, family, and freedom. Mike Huckabee, Senator Rand Paul, Rick Santorum, Star Parker, congressional members are already confirmed. Invited speakers include Dr. Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, Alan West, Governor Jan Brewer, Bobby Jindal, and Scott Walker. Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, Representatives Eric Cantor, Michelle Bachmann, and more. Today's hottest topics will be addressed: religious liberty, protection of life and marriage, government spending, and national security. Register today for just $99 at valuesvotersummit.org. That's valuesvotersummit.org. This October, stand with others who are committed to taking back our country. Go to valuesvotersummit.org.
Everybody says we're on the wrong side of history, but we respectfully disagree. History is not yet written, but we want to help write it. We are the Marriage Generation, children of the 1980s, who remain committed to the meaning and enduring value of marriage. Court rulings and elections cannot define truth. Our passion is to revive a marriage culture and shape the way our generation thinks and talks about marriage. We are not indifferent. We are the Marriage Generation. To learn more about us, visit marriagegeneration.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Well, up next, we'll talk with David Limbaugh about one soldier's reading problem. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins as he introduces our topic.
One of our brave soldiers is not just having to fight America's enemies to protect the First Amendment, but he is also now having to fight to protect his own rights from our government. And we had his lawyer on the show to give us the details, and you can access that show if you missed it on the website, TonyPerkins.com. Well, this military man's career, Master Sergeant, is in serious, took a serious hit, I would say, because he was told that he could not serve Chick-fil-A sandwiches at his own promotion party in support of the federal law defining marriage as the union of one man and one woman. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, he was also told that he could not read certain authors in uniform. He's told that he could not read Mark Levin, nor could he read a book by David Limbaugh. Well, here to give us his thoughts on that is David Limbaugh himself. David, welcome back to the program.
Tony, thanks for having me on. It was good to see you when you were in my hometown for that little event not long ago, and it's an honor to be on your show. I'm a big fan of your work, and I appreciate everything you do.
Well, back at you, David. I appreciate your thoughtful work that you put in on the paper, in the books that you publish, well-researched, well-thought-out work. And, you know, I was shocked when we began to get in the store. We had communications with his attorneys, and I was in a conversation with his attorney. He said, well, yeah, and by the way, he was told he couldn't read books by Mark Levin and David Limbaugh. And I said, wow, how far have they gone in the military in suppressing the rights of those who serve? What was your reaction?
I didn't feel personally threatened. I was a little tickled that my book made the list of forbidden material, but I'm horrified at the principle of this, that Obama's culture of liberalism and selective censorship is so pervasive that it has now infected the military, which is obviously traditionally a conservative institution, so much that liberals make a point of suppressing the military vote. I guess they've infiltrated the military so much that they're going to now start encouraging a military vote. But this is really Stalinism. And to suggest that a soldier cannot express his views, even indirectly, by reading a book that is critical of Barack Obama, is so foreign to the concept of the freedom that we enjoy in this country. Even in the military, you don't lose all of your freedoms because you're in the military, but even fostering the kind of the notion that you can't criticize the commander-in-chief is to suggest that we have a monarchy, or we have Barack Obama as a king who is above criticism. This is dangerous to the whole fabric of the republic, and it shows how intolerant the culture of liberalism is. They claim that they're tolerant. The truth is, they're totalitarian in their thinking, in their religious freedom protection. They don't want to protect the freedoms of Christians. Look at what Obama is doing to the rights of conscience, and yet look what he does. How he inconsistently applies his principles across the board. He bends over backwards to protect the feelings and rights of Muslims, and does everything he can not to protect the expression of Christianity and Christian freedom. And I think people ought to be really nervous about what's going on in this country.
David, you know, there's so much coming out of this administration, and it, as you described, it's outrageous, but it's threatening the very foundation of our constitutional republic. What would you say to Christians in terms of how should we be reacting to these things, and what should we be doing?
That's a very interesting question, Tony, and I'm sure it's close to your heart, considering what you do in the public arena. I don't accept the notion that so many evangelical Christians have, that we should make a choice between politics and serving Christ. I think that they're not mutually exclusive, and I think why even if you're a Calvinist, you have a duty. We have a duty to try to do everything we can to promote the kind of values that we believe in and that are consistent with biblical principles. And I don't think what we're seeing now is conducive to that in the United States. We're seeing a dilution of our liberties. I think we Christians have to stand up. We're not put on this earth, I don't think, to be automatons and robots. I think we're put on here to make the best of things and to become Christ-like if we can, and help other people learn about Christ and the gospel. And I submit to you that if you don't have a free political system, you do not have nearly as great a chance to evangelize as you otherwise would. Now, I don't deny that persecution can cause an eruption of the gospel, and it can spread like wildfire. But I also believe that you can promote evangelical principles and you can evangelize and much better in a climate of political and religious liberty. And so even if you view this totally from a spiritual viewpoint, we have a duty to enter the public square. And while I won't fault Christians if they just don't want to do that and if they want to sit on the sidelines and pray, I would at least ask them not to condemn those of us who do believe we're honor-bound to get involved in the public square on behalf of principles that we believe in and we believe are healthy to the promotion of Christian principles and the advancement of the kingdom.
You mentioned liberty and the freedoms that we have that allow the gospel to go forth. I don't want to put you on the spot, but this is a significant day. Something happened very significant in 1987. You recall what that was?
Yes. President Ronald Reagan called on Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev to tear down this wall. And how fitting that you would bring that up on today, given the topic we're discussing, because I do think that Barack Obama stands for precisely the opposite principles. He's erecting walls that are eroding liberty. And people can think that he has good intentions, wanting to redistribute wealth and help the poor and all that. I submit to you that the United States, the unique history of the United States, demonstrates that freedom and Christian values are what promotes the greatest prosperity and the greatest harmony in society. And we're the most unique, the most powerful, the freest nation that ever lived, and it's no accident that we were founded with Christian roots and not, as so many revisionists say, by French Enlightenment principles, although they did have some influence. And that's a subject we can talk some other time.
Yeah.
But I'm proud of our heritage, and I think it's being systematically undermined by the liberal establishment, culminating now in Barack Obama's presidency, where we've got the 60s radicals now who are running the entire country, and it's horrifying.
David Limbaugh, you're a great American. Thanks so much for being
with us.
Sir.
We hope that you'll contact your member of Congress and let them know how you feel about religious liberty. You can find links to help you do just that when you visit TonyPerkins.com. And for more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, you can reach us by phone at 866-372-1212, or you can partner with us online at TonyPerkins.com. Washington Watch Weekly is sponsored by the Family Research Council.